Welcome to The Human Way. I'm your host, Matt Havens. This is a podcast focused on people doing good by focusing on the similarities that we all share instead of what pulls us apart. At the end of the day, we're all human. So let's dive in. Welcome to another episode of The Human Way. I'm your host, Matt Havens. And I want to start off by just saying thank you. Like 100% completely genuine from the bottom of my heart. Thank you. The number of messages I received, the comments, the likes, the downloads from our first episode last week, it means the world to me. Thank you. And many of you I know, like I said, many of you I know are close friends. But still, the fact that you took time out of your day to listen and comment and share, it means the world to me. Thank you so much for doing that. If this is the first time you're listening, or if you haven't listened to the first episode, please go back. Do what the kids say. I think they call it smashing the like button. Share it with your friends. Do all those things that the kids are doing. Let's get the word out. But I'm excited for kind of what we're building here. Today, it's going to be one more with just me. But I am excited to announce that we've got some guests lined up. We're going to be recording next week to kind of get that rolling. And so I'm excited to you won't have to just listen to me ramble all the time here going forward. So look out for that. I also know that we're going to be having some conversations that I wasn't really thinking we might have. But when the opportunity presents itself, you just kind of roll with it. And that's what we're going to do. I'm excited for where it's going to go. So tune in to the next couple episodes when those come up. But today, what I want to talk about here pretty briefly is this another one of the human truths that is foundational to us understanding about each other. Last week, we talked about community and how all of us are in need of community. We're searching for it. And if we can understand that maybe some people that we encounter or deal with on a daily basis, they haven't found their community yet. Or maybe they found the wrong one and they're trying to change. But all of us go through that process. And if we understand that happens to all of us, then we can have a little more empathy in how we deal with that. Another thing that we do as humans, every single one of us fails. Every single one of us has failures in our life, some big, some small. Some of us are failing at this exact moment. But I want to broaden this idea of failure to not just say that, yes, we all fail. More importantly, it's about our perception, the perception that we have of those failures in us and in other people. That's what's different. And that's what we have to harness and understand more than just recognizing that we all fail. Yes, we all know that. You might have heard the examples from Thomas Edison. Thomas Edison had like 1,000 patents and inventions before he stumbled upon the light bulb. My favorite is Michael Jordan. Michael Jordan has missed over 9,000 shots. He's lost over 300 games. And countless times he's been asked to take the final shot in a game and he's missed. And he's quoted as saying that he has failed over and over. And that is why he succeeds. Because people like that have this view of this perception of failure as a positive. And so that's a little bit different than just saying we all fail. So that's where I want to kind of focus it. And recently I saw an interview done that I thought really just spoke exactly to that. So I'm going to share that clip here with you. This clip is from Emmanuel Acho. If you do not know him, he is a former NFL player, now broadcaster, now author and show host. Because he really kind of came into his own light, I would say, in this past year during some of the social injustice that was happening and the murder of George Floyd. He started a platform and a conversation that's titled Uncomfortable Conversations with the Black Man. And if you haven't listened to it or listened to any episodes, I encourage you to do so. It's really insightful and it helps kind of continue a conversation that maybe some people haven't had yet. So check that out. But what he, in this interview, it was a social media post actually. What he was talking about was he was receiving a lot of messages on social media from Twitter trolls and people like that saying, man, you had such a failed career. Why are you even doing this? And the way that he framed up his perception of failure was beautiful. So take a listen.
So recently a Twitter troll sent me a screenshot of my failed NFL career. It was a screenshot of the transactions of me being traded to the Philadelphia Eagles, released and cut. In fact, released 5 times within a 3-year period. But rather than debating this Twitter troll, I simply looked at what they called failures and said, you know what? These were my favorite failures. See, without the NFL and failing in the NFL, there would have been no moving on to a next career. There's no Forbes 30 under 30 list. There's no New York Times best-selling book. There's definitely not co-hosting my own show before the age of 30. I realized at that moment that my NFL career If you want to call it a failure, then it was in fact my favorite failure.
Man, what a beautiful way to look at that. One person views his career a failure, and another person views it as the springboard to who he wants to become. And I think it's a powerful question that we all have to ask ourselves. What is your favorite failure? I know I've got many favorites, but I know one. I've shared this in the past before, but I think it plays out here. So I'll share it with you now. My favorite failure started about 6 or 7 years ago. I was a leader in a contact center. We were starting this new program for the organization. It was an outbound sales department. Outbound sales. So we were calling you during the day and we were trying to sell you some insurance. I mean, I know you hated us, but we did it anyways. And we were doing as best as we could. We had a lot of passionate people. We started off with a team of maybe 70 or 80 people or so. And the honest truth is we were scrapping by. Like, we were scrapping. We had no resources to appropriately do this. And you'd think for, you know, Fortune 50 company, you'd have all the things that you need. But no, we were doing stuff on sticky notes and Excel spreadsheets and tally marks. Like, it was nuts. But as we built it, we continued to get a little bit more resources, got a little bit better, to the point where the organization was also expanding. There was expansion plans in some major cities, and we were going to be putting this outbound department in the major cities. It's the reason that I moved from Illinois to Dallas, because I came to Dallas to set up the operation here. And so now we had grown to a couple hundred people. And after a couple years of doing this, we've realized that the program wasn't successful. It was deemed unsuccessful, and that we needed to shut things down. And what I'm super proud of that organization for, and the leaders who made the decision, because it wasn't my decision, the leaders above me who made the decision, is when we decided to shut it down, we did not fire people. We didn't fire 200 people. Everybody had a job. It was going to look a little bit differently, but nobody had to lose their job over realizing that this program isn't successful. I'm super proud of the organization for doing that. But that's where it starts to hit the point of my favorite failure, because now, as a leader of that team here in Dallas, I have the responsibility to announce to everybody that we're shutting things down. And I always tell leaders, you know, when you have information that may not be well received, particularly if you have advance notice, like I had about a day advance notice, man, you got to get your mind right. You got to get your mind right, because you need to project a little bit of confidence, but more importantly, you have to project a calmness, because people are going to have questions. Everybody there was extremely passionate about what we had built and what we were doing. So now to hear that we weren't going to be doing that, it was certainly going to generate some questions. And if I didn't have my mind right, well, then those questions I'm not going to be able to answer. I'm not going to be able to help support them as we go through this process. So I got up that morning. I can still remember exactly what the place looked like, where people were sitting. And I got up to deliver this message. And even though I thought my mind was right, apparently it wasn't, because I choked up. I did. Man, you can hear it in my voice. There weren't like tears coming down, but you know, I was choked up. What can I say? And so whatever, I get through the message, deliver it. And I did have, you know, a lot of the people in the audience that were impacted by this decision come up and say, hey, you know, it was good. We can tell that you really care about this. We can tell that you're as passionate about this as we are. So it was kind of good to see that. But, you know, hey, we'll get through this. And you know, we talked it through and we went on. But that moment definitely changed my trajectory in that leadership role, because my leaders were there. They saw that I got choked up. And what happened shortly after that is, all of a sudden, whereas I kind of thought I was on maybe a path up the organization, now there was a question. And the question was, does Matt have executive presence? Can he handle the tough decisions that he's going to have to make? And can he deliver them? And it's an honest question. I'm not faulting anybody for saying that. But I would say that at the time, I did not agree with it. In my opinion, it was just one time. It was one time. Yes, I'm sorry. I was passionate about this decision. I didn't get my mind right. I promise I will next time. You know, let's move on. But it did. It kind of slowed things down a little bit. And so when you're presented with the situation that maybe you don't agree with, or you failed, then you have a decision to make. Are you going to let that define who you are? Are you going to argue with the decision? Or are you going to go do something about it? And so I tried to take that approach. I said, all right, I don't agree that I need executive presence, but I will do what's necessary because I still want to continue to move up. I still want these other additional opportunities and responsibilities. So I went to my boss and I said, all right, what does the organization have that can help me with executive presence? Fortunately, the answer was not a whole lot. Okay, can I go outside of the organization? Can I find some training and development programs that could help? Yeah, that'd be great. So I went and did that, came back, brought those back. Ooh, those are too expensive. Nope, can't do that. Okay. So I don't have anything within the organization. I don't have anything outside of the organization. And that's where this idea spawned to, all right, so executive presence is about standing on stages. Executive presence is about delivering messages. And it just so happened, I have family that's in a speaking industry. I know about it. I have some contacts within that. And so kind of hatched a plan with help and support from many people to go out and start public speaking. And I went back to my boss and I said, hey, we don't have anything here in the organization. There's nothing else out there. I found an opportunity where I can go and I can start speaking. I had some experience with this millennial generation thing from previous work. That's a topic that I think we could talk about. And so I went and did. And they were completely supportive of that idea. And the idea that, oh, great, yes, you'll get some executive presence doing that. We'll continue to work here and you can do that. So that was the springboard to me starting a speaking career. So it's my favorite failure because of the path it put me on. It taught me as a leader to give grace, but more importantly, I'd say as a leader, it also taught me that we need to celebrate the failures as much as the wins. I mean, when is the last time that you have celebrated a failure that you had publicly with your team, with your family, whatever it may be? Let's change this conversation around failure. You have to start by giving it light, by being able to talk about failures and recognize that we all have them. So that's why I ask, what's your favorite failure? But it's also, we can think about it in terms of like, what are we failing at now? Like, what are the things that we're just not doing so well right now? You know, I know one for me right now, I am not a very good Girl Scout dad. Yeah, my girls are so excited to be selling cookies. And it's the last thing I want to do. Like, I don't want to hawk cookies outside of Lowe's. It's just not my thing. So I'm failing as a Girl Scout dad. I will be better if you live in Dallas this weekend and some 37-year-old guy with slightly gray hair comes up to you and is trying to sell you cookies. Just know that I am trying to be a better dad, okay? So anyways, what's your favorite failure? We got to start looking at failure in a more positive light and recognizing that our perception of these failures will drive our behaviors. It'll drive the culture that we're creating in organizations. And we have an opportunity and an ability to look at those in different ways and embrace it just like we do some of the wins. So thank you so much. That's the end of this episode. Thank you for listening, for watching. Check out the past one. Get ready for some of the ones coming up. I'm super pumped for those. At the end of the day, folks, remember, we're all humans. And if we look for more of the similarities that we all have in each other, like failure, like community, instead of focusing on the differences, I guarantee you will find what you're looking for.